There have been at least 4 adaptations of this particular movie. The one that I remember the most came out in 1980 and it was starring Neil Diamond. The movie was called The Jazz Singer. Neil Diamond's version didn't meet to very good reviews, but I found myself thinking recently, which I'm sure you know by now is dangerous, about the term the jazz singer. And there was one particular singer that came to mind, and we lost him last Friday. Here's Tony Bennett with I Left My Heart in San Francisco.
San Francisco, your golden sun will shine for me.
I had learned that song was finished rather no higher than 19th. And this, when the obituary I read about Tony Bennett said this, he had fought Alzheimer's since 2016. Wow. The man had a 70-year career. He teamed up with a lot of people in different music genres. The man was talented and he lasted a long time. Tony Bennett passed away last Friday at the age of 94. And now for some other business. In 2020, of course, we were in the middle of that wonderful pandemic of ours. So there was an article that I had downloaded to my New Direction Podcast Facebook page that I hadn't had a chance to touch. I found a chance to maybe possibly revisit that for this particular episode. These are excerpts from a book that a nationally known author had written. And I believe it's been released. I'm going to try to find it someplace after talking about it and learn a little bit more about why this guy seems to think we still need to move downtown. He says the timing is right. And I'm hoping to kind of dig through and see what the heck he's talking about for this first segment. For the second segment, I want to take a look at another article that was released from another Kansas City periodical that talked about how black baseball was saved here in Kansas City. I guess this is baseball unfinished business time as football's gearing up right away. And we'll take care of these last two articles as we get going here on the New Directions podcast. We'll get started with a nationally known author's opinion for the Royals. We'll talk about that on the other side of this break. Coming to Stormont Vale Event Center, Friday night, October 23rd, with special guest Josh Abbott Band, singer-songwriter Dierks Bentley. He sings with his heart on his sleeve. He is very, very energetic. His shows are energetic as well. This is one show you don't want to miss. Coming to, once again, the Stormont Vale Event Center in Topeka, October the 23rd, Dierks Bentley, Josh Abbott Band. Tickets are available through Ticketmaster. To lead off this segment, a disclaimer to share. This does not reflect opinions, at least not mine. This is something that came to my attention in the middle of the pandemic originally. So I wasn't able to really devote a lot to this because of all the coverage we had of that. I rediscovered this and discovered, okay, maybe there's some things that might actually be pretty interesting. So, the first segment it is, and we're going to get into it right now. The magazine this comes from is, as soon as I get it up here, I'll tell you. City Scene KC. Website, of course, cityscenekc.com. The man, his name is Paul Goldberger, and he's the author of Ballpark, Baseball in the American City. Kevin Collison wrote the article, and his words read this way: Kansas City was lucky 15 years ago. This was 2020, remember, not to build a downtown ballpark when the Royals' lease was last up. But that's all changed now, according to Paul Goldberger, author of the new book, Ballpark, Baseball in the American City. The Pulitzer Prize-winning architectural critic, who wrote for the New York Times, The New Yorker, and now Vanity Fair, was the keynote speaker at the Downtown Council annual luncheon way back in January of 20. Kansas City was hoping the ballpark would jumpstart a whole downtown renewal, which probably was too much to expect, Goldberger told the 1,000 people at the K Barnes Ballroom in the convention center. Baseball can contribute an enormous amount to downtown, but it can rarely do the job of initiating an entire downtown renewal by itself. Now, however, it is a different time. It is a time to consider actually building a downtown ballpark. Kansas City has a downtown that is filled with demand, filled with activity, filled with all of the things you need for a ballpark. Goldberger's observations come at a pivotal time when the idea of a downtown ballpark is back on the community agenda. John Sherman, the new Royals owner, has expressed support should the right deal come together. The Royals' lease at Kauffman expires in 2031, which sounds a long ways off, but not when it comes to back-timing the several years it will take to assemble land and design a new ballpark should that option be chosen. Goldberger's talk reviewed Kansas City's preeminent role in the sports architecture world and how baseball's return to downtowns around the country, beginning with Camden Yards in Baltimore in 1992, has returned the game to its urban roots. The story of our ballparks is the story of our cities, he said. That is the premise of the book that I just wrote. We lost touch with that for several decades when we were building almost everything we could in the suburbs to accommodate the automobile. Ever since Camden Yards brought baseball back to the city, we now have extraordinary array of great urban ballparks in our own time. Truman Sports Complex, which opened in 1973, temporarily gave Kansas City a lead role in reversing what Goldberger referred to as the concrete donut era of sports facilities following World War II that combined football and baseball. It's one of the only incidents in those years, Dodger Stadium being the other, where the city chose not to give in to wrong-headed fad of creating mixed-use stadiums, he said. Kansas City went against the grain and built separate stadiums. The pioneering design of Kauffman and Arrowhead by local architect Charles Deaton, working with the firm of Kivett and Myers, launched the city's sports architecture reputation. It led to the creation of HOK Sports in 1983, now Populous, and several other spin-off firms. Kansas City, for all intents and purposes, became the nation's center for sports architecture, Goldberger said. Sports architecture is one of Kansas City's most important exports. There's a picture that is in this article. It said Camden Yards in Baltimore began the return of baseball to downtown in 1992. But the city has not kept up. For all the historical and architectural importance of this complex, it has one significant shortcoming by the standards of today, he said. It's in the wrong place, disconnected from the energy of the city. There's a strong and vibrant downtown today that continues to strengthen in so many ways, yet you do not have what Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Denver, San Francisco, San Diego, Minneapolis, Houston, and Seattle have, which is a recently constructed baseball park as a part of this renewed urban fabric. And while the city missed out on the downtown ballpark renaissance of the 1990s and early 2000s, that delay may have worked in its favor. Goldberger said the latest trend for downtown ballparks to be built as part of a larger redevelopment plan reduced the need for public subsidies. What? The key trend is helping to pay for ballparks, not by taking excessive advantage of municipal funding, but instead by allowing the team to support the project in part by allowing it to develop adjacent real estate. He mentioned Wrigley Field in Chicago, where the team owner is redeveloping its surrounding neighborhood, and Busch Stadium in St. Louis, where the Cardinals have teamed with the Cordish Company to build what's called Ballpark Village, as examples. It's an idea that makes potential sense in Kansas City, he said. Now, as opposed to 15 years ago, is the right time to build a downtown ballpark, because now it's easy to imagine enough demand to build additional commercial and residential structures around the ballpark to help support it. That would allow the ballpark to be a catalyst of development rather than a recipient of municipal welfare. So my hope is that you build a ballpark that could be no place in the world but downtown Kansas City. Strengthen that core and use a baseball park to do it. In a related matter, Pendulum, a small architectural firm at 1512 Holmes, released what it described as an unsolicited video rendering of how a downtown ballpark might look in the East Village. Pendulum's background includes experience designing minor league ballparks. The downtown council luncheon also included the recognition of Crossroads legend Susie Aaron with its J. Philip Kirk Award, Jr. Award, its highest honor for people who've contributed to the revival of downtown. What the heck do you guys want? A medal? In addition to honoring Aaron, the event also recognized several people with its annual Urban Heroes Award. Art patrons Dick and Evelyn Kraft Belger, artist Peregrine Honig, Jennifer Lapka, formerly of Rightfully Sown, and historian Bob Hendrick. Beginning in December 2019, that's just their credit, I guess. You know my opinion. Those of you who have listened to this broadcast enough know my opinion. If they need to move, I would rather they move to North Kansas City. It would be easier to get to. It would be a lot closer to home. People could drive and walk. So you built downtown up. Good for you. We need to see what happens when you have a soccer team, a ladies' soccer team at that, playing over there. That's what I said in my commentary. I'm going to stand behind that. Anyway, that is the nationally known author's opinion regarding whether we should or should not have a downtown ballpark. And this is going to be a subject I know that's going to be talked about for quite a while. It'll even come here, I'm sure. On the other side of this break, there's a story that's, I would think, probably would be inspirational. It talked about how black baseball was saved here in Kansas City. I'm ready to learn about this. I hope you are too. We'll both do it right after this. Recently, I had a chance to visit a restaurant for the very first time that I know a lot of you have already visited, but what I've learned, I like. This is Terry Runyon from the New Directions Podcast, here to share with you about Olive Garden. Some of the best pasta cooking I have ever seen. My wife and I had an opportunity to have a lasagna recently, and I saw something that I had never, ever seen in any restaurant anywhere. The waiter offered to pour cheese into our meal as well as salad. I had never seen that happen. That was just very, very nice to see. The Olive Garden people do care about what they bring to the table every day. And they show in the food that they deliver. And I have to say that lasagna is one of the best lasagnas that I have ever had. Whenever you have an opportunity, my friends, I invite you to pay a visit to the Olive Garden near you and really have a good time having some good old-fashioned Italian cooking. And if you want to, tell them Terry Runyon from the New Directions Podcast sent you. My favorite overall resource for material for this broadcast has been the folks at National Public Radio here in Kansas City, KCUR 89.3. And they had another interesting article that was dated in March of this year. And it talked about a little history I didn't even know. So I'm going to share this with you. The story is called, just a second here, Meet the Kansas City Man Who Helped Save the History of Black Baseball in America. But I think it was a good move. With that in mind, here we go. In February 1920, the owners of 8 independently owned black baseball teams met in Kansas City at the Paseo YMCA, and the Negro National League was born. It was not the first all-black baseball league, but it's the one that modernized the Negro Leagues, and it was the last before integration. The Negro League Baseball Centennial is being celebrated this year all over the country. But if it weren't for a Kansas City man who grew up in the same neighborhood as a handful of former players for the Kansas City Monarchs, we might not even know this history. As a kid in the 1960s, Phil Dixon lived near the Fairfield District of Kansas City, Kansas. He was a huge baseball fan, but nothing he read about baseball history ever mentioned the guys he knew from his neighborhood. In the books I was reading, the black players started with Jackie Robinson, says Dixon. That's where it started for many people. But when you talk to the average fan, they knew better. So I got curious. More than 500 interviews later, on top of hours spent in libraries reading old newspaper articles on microfilm, Dixon, who juggled his research with a day job as an insurance salesman, published 1992's The Negro Baseball Leagues, 1867 to 1955, a photographic history. It was the first of 9 books Dixon had written on Negro Leagues baseball, putting players' stories front and center, and it's the foundation other baseball scholars have built upon since that time. The passion to fill that gap is the reason I will still do this today, he says. Dixon grew up in a world when being black was the norm. I went to all-black schools. I played on all-black sports teams. I went to an all-black church, and every day when I woke up, all I saw was black people, he recalls. Occasionally, white people would get lost, and they would come down my street. Whenever we would see a white person coming down, we knew they were lost. But he began his baseball research with an encyclopedia that came from a white family. His mother, a college graduate, worked for the family as a house cleaner. It was the 1960s, Dixon explains. I was just learning about baseball, and I said, I wonder what this encyclopedia says about baseball. It had pictures from like 1932. So I said, this encyclopedia is old, but it's what we had, and it was given to us by that white family. He has another childhood memory of integrating a handful of Kansas City restaurants. A white couple by the name of Hughes came to his church and invited people to go with them to white-only restaurants. We would be the only black people there, he says. People would begin to make comments, and the Hugheses would say, don't worry about that, just eat your food. Despite having lived it, Dixon's academic study of history didn't begin until college, when he visited an old black historian looking for help with the project. He said, what do you know about the Emancipation Proclamation? Dixon fumbled through an answer, and the historian opened his office door and said, come back when you know about the Emancipation Proclamation. It was at that moment that sent him down a path of formal research, and ultimately Dixon started filling the gap between recorded baseball history and the history that black people knew. The players had the information, but they didn't have an outlet. I wanted to be that outlet, he says. So he talked to not just players, but their grown children and their wives. If you'd get to one player or one family, he recalls, they would know about someone else. He'd drive to St. Louis to meet with Cool Papa Bell, who played for the St. Louis Stars, and Bell's wife. People know him as the fastest running baseball player that ever lived. Satchel Paige used to tell the story that he could turn the lights off and get into bed before the room got dark. Or he'd be reading an old newspaper story, like the one about Chet Brewer, who played for the Monarchs and later did some coaching for the Royals. He had a fight with a white third baseman in an all-star game, Dixon says. That moment had been written about, but none of the stories explained the fight. So I called him up. I said, Chet, why did you have the fight? What was going on? He said, well, he called me a bunch of names. I was all able to get those kind of interviews. Those interviews were conducted on road trips across the country over Dixon's vacation time. And the accompanying genealogy research and combing of newspaper articles was done on lunch breaks. I'd go to work in the morning and the midday was kind of slow, so I would take my lunch break and go to the library. Dixon's approach to write about the players, he says, because the players are the most important part of the story. But the story he's talking about isn't just the story of black baseball, it's the story of baseball. These players' stories are also part of the history of the sport, not separate from it. It was very separate when I first started, he says. My whole effort has been to combine those histories and make them one history, which is American baseball history. And the credits at the end, Phil Dixon spoke with KCUR on a recent edition of Central Standard. The full conversation is available, of course, at KCUR.org. We will preview our next podcast on the other side of this break. Imagine yourselves in a concert hall. You're anticipating the main event. Your enthusiasm level really starts to jump when you hear music like this. You have a wide smile. The anticipation level is very high, and then on October the 6th, Ameristar Casino will be the place. They're coming back, my friends. The Oak Ridge Boys have one show on that particular night. The multi-award-winning quartet and my heroes will be back. I will be there, and I hope you will be too. You can get your tickets online at oakridgeboys.com. The legendary Oak Ridge Boys, October the 6th, Ameristar Casino. Be there. Next time here on the podcast, I'm going to bring you up to date a little bit on my own personal adventures on my road to ministry. Mention some things that have been happening related to that for the first segment. And for the second, I want to share with you what has become my favorite of the sermons I've preached so far. There is a Paul Harvey influence, and I'll just go ahead and say it. It's the rest of the story. So we will get personal next time right here on the New Directions podcast. For final thoughts, I have one simple thought to share. And our friends Snoopy and Woodstock have the best idea that I have ever come up with. And it's simply this: when nothing is going right, listen to music. I'm for doing just that. But before we do, that's going to wind things up for this edition of the New Directions podcast. Thank you for being with me as always. See you next time when I get personal. Until then, Billy Crash, get us out of here. Get me down, get me down.
Music. I got the music. Yeah.